So, we're in lesson six, talking about the crossing of the Jordan. And, again, we're going to focus on two things. How does this Bible story that we teach the kids fit into the grand plan across the ages? And what can Christians learn from this story? So, we know that right before this, Moses had failed in following God's command. And because of this, he was not allowed to enter the promised land. And I think it's important to note that he was the leader of the people. They were interested in doing what he said sometimes. Not all the time, but you know, they recognized him as leader is what I'm trying to say. But they were not punished for Moses' error. And I think we need to remember that when people are talking about original sin and how, you know, well, what can you expect? That child came from bad seed, and all those things can have an impact, but not original sin. But the fathers aren't responsible for the sins of the son, and vice versa. And Moses was held responsible for his sin, his disobedience to God, and he was punished for that. But the people were, what happened to them?
They died.
The ones that had disobeyed in the wilderness died. A whole new generation came in, and they were allowed to go into that land of promise. They were allowed to fulfill the promise because they hadn't done those sins. Now, we can get into plenty of other things they did, but for the moment, that's where we were.
Back to Moses just a minute. He did go to heaven, though, didn't he?
I believe he did. Any comment on that? He's a man of faith. He's talked about as one of the fathers. So, and you know, that's like our life now. We'll have consequences for sins in this life, but we know that we can repent and we can get back right with God and have the eternal blessing. But that may not take away the consequences of the sin here, of what happened to us here. Other comments? Okay, so once again, even with Moses, we're still talking about water. It's another instance where water came into play. But a new leader was chosen. Who was that?
Joshua.
And some of the people, you know, they're close now. They've been wandering a long time, and they're close. And they're to the part. It looks pretty good to them because they're really in the land of promise at this point already. And some of them wanted to settle there. Who was that? What, 2.5 tribes?
Oh, the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh.
I just swore that God took Moses, and that's what I was reading. But it doesn't say that explicitly, does it?
He died. He just said he died.
Mm-hmm.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
A generation was 20 years. They wandered for 40 years. So it was 2 generations.
Well, it was every man above the age of 20.
Is
that right?
Yeah.
Everybody. So it'd take a while to get all of those. Mm-hmm. But the generations, you know, he counted everybody from the age of 20 up. So,
yeah, that's right.
They're not going to die, most of them, in 20 years. It'll take longer than that.
I just think it might be the sons, and then the sons of the adults. And so he went into a third generation because that second generation might still...
Well, I think they could all be held culpable in that we don't have anything that says... This group of people said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to whine. We're not going to murmur. We're going to do everything God says. It was across the board. Now, certainly there could have been one or two people that didn't do that. 15 people, 107 people. But the nation as a whole went against God. And that's what scares me for our nation. Because we can't look at it and say we're faithful to God. Some of us are. But if the Lord decides to take this country down, and he may, he certainly has countries, will our being faithful Christians necessarily protect us from the consequences of that on this life, in this life?
It didn't.
No, we don't have any reason to believe that it would.
We just have to stay faithful even in the face of that.
Right, even in the face of that. Although,
but what does it matter if God has taken us
right
to be eternally with him?
Right.
We're okay.
Right.
We don't look at it that way a lot because we've never experienced that.
This is the only experience we have. But we do know in this lesson how Rahab and her family were saved, even though the country was destroyed. So, you know, we can't say absolutely that our being a faithful Christian would protect us in the midst of this country falling. But we can't say absolutely that it wouldn't, because we have examples both ways.
It's the same thing with natural disasters. It's part of being.
It is part of just living.
I like it that Rahab showed that she, even in that day and age, she had a brain and she dared to use it.
I agree.
Very good.
But you know, as I studied this last evening, I thought, how did she know so much? Mm-hmm. You know, when she asked that they remember her, how did she have time to learn? This is what entered my mind, because she wasn't hardly, you know.
Well, let's get down to that when we get to Rev. Just hold that thought and let's come back to it. No, it's all right. I'm always happy for people to talk. Talking is better than not. Okay, so Joshua was prepared to lead the Israelites into the land, and they were approaching from the east. Now, why was that? Because it took me, I had to relook at maps just to make it okay in my brain. I knew that was true. But I had to look at several maps because Egypt's over here to the west.
It's across the Red Sea and then...
Across the Red Sea.
And then we came back.
And they wandered, and now they've got to come back into it. But when I first read it, I went, okay, I know they came from the east, but let me make that work with the different bodies of water that I've got to figure out. So now they're ready to go back.
I could have helped her out here.
So, anyway, some of them wanted to settle there on the east side, and were they allowed to do that? Mm-hmm. But at what agreement?
They had to go work with the others.
That's right. You don't get to just sit here and have this land. You have to go take the land with everybody else, and then you can settle there. Yeah. So, first question there, in chapter 1, verses 6 and 7, what does God tell Joshua he'll need in order to possess the land?
Strength and courage.
Strength and courage. Strong and courageous. One of my favorite songs. Courage. And how was Joshua to do this? What was to be his constant companion?
The book of the law
with you at all the time, reading it all the time,
and
the Lord will be with you. And specifically in verse 3, what did he promise? I mean, question 3, verse 5, what did God promise Joshua if he followed these commands?
Well, he promised him he'd be with him always.
Mm-hmm. He said no man will stand before you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. You're talking about a man of war here, a soldier, a leader. And God has made them a promise, you will win every battle. Did they? With the exception of that one where they doubted and didn't do what they were supposed to do, and they lost a bunch of men. But what an extraordinary thing for a fighting man to hear. You will win every battle. Do you think that allowed Joshua to just sit back and go, okay, never mind, Lord will take care of it? They fought. But they fought, and they did not lose people. They did not lose men of their number.
That didn't mean they were going to go sit on their hands and wait for it to happen. It meant they had to go do it.
They had to go do it, and the Lord would be with them while they did the work. Does that have anything to do with us today?
Definitely. We have our part. God said he would save us, but we have to do our part.
Right. And possibly our part in teaching and bringing others to the Lord. Can we just sit and never open our mouths about it? How is that going to... I mean, we know that God's not just going to miraculously strike someone and say, here's what you need to be saved. Here's what you need to do.
And that takes a lot of courage sometimes.
It does. It does. I'll tell you, I have been more impressed with Kaylee than with a lot of grown-ups. She is so willing to talk to her friends and to have Bible discussions with them. And we know this because she comes home and says, what verse do I need on that? And I think when the young people did it, it does take a tremendous amount of courage because their whole peer setup could disappear. You know, people could just say, I'm not going to do that anymore.
She was asking me the other day to help her to figure out what to say to get him interested in this.
Yeah.
We had.
And I know Jeremiah, Stan talks a lot about Jeremiah's contacts with people. That takes a lot of courage.
And one good thing about the internet and the phone, they can do that without being, it takes, I think, a lot more courage when you're sitting next to someone.
It does. When they might get up and walk out.
Hey, whatever it takes to tell them.
But you know, their peer pressure is bound to be so great.
Oh, yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah. And depending on the age of the kids, they can be real mean. I think kids are meaner than they used to be, frankly. Sharon, would you read for me? Would you read in Numbers 32? Verses 16. It's about the half the tribes that would have to go over. 32. I'll start with 16. I'm just trying to figure out where I want you to read through. Through 27.
16 through 27.
Mm-hmm.
Then they came near to him and said, we will build sheepfolds for our livestock and cities for our little ones. But we will pick up arms ready to go before the people of Israel until they brought them to their place. And our little ones shall live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until each of the people of Israel has gained his inheritance. But we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has come to us on this side of the Jordan to the east. So Moses said to them, if you will do this, if you will take up arms to go before the Lord for the war, and for every armed man of you will pass over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord. And after that, you will return and be free of obligations to the Lord and to Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Build cities for your little ones and folds for your sheep, and do what you have promised. And the people of God and the people of Reuben and to Moses said to Moses, your servants will do as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our livestock, and all our cattle shall remain here in the cities of Gilead. But your servants will pass over, every man who is armed for war, before the Lord to battle, as my Lord orders.
You know, when I was thinking about that, they're leaving their wives and kids behind, and they're kind of safer over there. On the other hand, it took out a whole lot of people that they were having to do logistic things with on this side while they're fighting. So it's probably helpful even in engaging in battle just to have that number of people set aside and out of the way. I made a little map. I didn't make it. I copied it. Jordan, it's pretty dark copy, and I apologize. I was going to do it in pretty colors, but I'm out of ink at home, so... You didn't get pretty close today. Just pass that around. because I thought this was a nice, clear, concise map that helped us see kind of where they were. And now remember, they had come up from way down here, from major way up here, and they were near Jericho because that was the first city they were going to have to conquer. And I learned something on this one when you read number 5. Who did Joshua send to check out this city? Right. Did you ever find anything more about them?
Just two men.
And I really, for some reason, thought we knew who they were.
Where they were from.
But unless it's in a verse I couldn't find.
They're from Achaia Grove, whatever that is, wherever that was.
I couldn't find that either.
Well, another name was Shittim. I don't know if that shows up on anything.
Anyway, just two men. And I don't know, I just found that interesting because the Bible is so full of names and who did this and who went there and what tribe they were from. And two guys. So two spies went in. How's that different from what happened before, the last time they went in? How many spies did they send the last time?
12.
One from each tribe. And an aside that the Bible doesn't comment on, this is just my thinking, have you ever worked on a committee? The bigger the committee, the worse the decision making.
I used to love to send out the decision.
So, you know, I think maybe Joshua went, we're not doing that again. Now, the Lord told him what to do and how to do it. But I can just envision him going, that 12 thing didn't work out. I know, I was one of them. It didn't work out. So he sent two over. And they know that they're going to, now that after this, they know they're going to take this land. They know they're going to start with Jericho. And so the spies go in, and who finds them?
Rahab.
And there's the million-dollar discussions on Rahab and who she was and what she did. And the Bible very clearly says harlot. I don't know that I have any issues with thinking she did anything else. But I do want to read you what this guy Clark says. Because it was interesting. I don't know that I go along with what he said. Just we'll have it. Harlots and innkeepers seem to have been called by the same name, as no doubt many who followed this mode of life from their exposed situation were not the most correct in their morals. I'm fully satisfied, he was fully satisfied, that the term zona in the text, which we translate harlot, should be rendered tavern or innkeeper or hostess. The spies who were sent out on this occasion were undoubtedly the most confidential persons that Joshua had in his host. They went on an errand of the most weighty importance and which involved the greatest consequences. The risk they ran of losing their lives in this enterprise was extreme. It is therefore likely that persons who could not escape apprehension and death without the miraculous interference of God should, in despite of what law, go into a place where they might expect not a blessing but a curse of God. Very convoluted sentence. What he is saying is, since God was miraculously keeping them safe, would he have sent them to a harlot? Well, it says he did. But that's his thinking here. Well, that's an evil person, and God wouldn't have chosen an evil person to do his will. Now, we have lots of times that God has used evil people to make his will happen on earth. So, is it not therefore more likely that they rather went to an inn to lodge than to a brothel? But what completes, in my judgment, the evidence on this point is that this very Rahab, whom we call a harlot, was actually married to Salmon, a Jewish prince, Matthew 1:5. And is it probable that a prince of Judah would have taken as wife, such a person of our text represents Rahab to be? So he's gone into a whole lot of speculation here. Innkeeper and harlot tend to be the same word, but he doesn't say that zona was translated that other way. Would God have used an evil person? Could a prince of Israel been married to a harlot? Well, let's see. Let's talk Solomon. You know, I don't know that we can dismiss any of that.
If he was a prince, he could do what he wanted to.
Right. And wouldn't necessarily be doing it. And it doesn't tell us in the Bible that he's a prince. It just lists him.
Well, one of the apostles was an evil man.
Yeah.
So he used him.
Yeah.
You know.
So I don't think that's a solid way to make a decision, because that's using our human wisdom instead of what the book says. The next verse says, the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, and then he says, this appears to be proof of the preceding opinion. Had she been a prostitute or a person of ill fame, he could have at once sent officers to seize the persons lodged with her as vagabonds. But if she kept a house of entertainment, persons under her roof were sacred according to the universal custom of the Asiatics and could not be molested. Again, big, big, big speculation. Probably the king of Jericho could have done what he wanted any way he wanted it. He appeared to just ask the question. Anyway, that controversy I remember hearing when I was quite young and thinking, but the Bible says harlot. Why am I spending time trying to make it not be what it says? And I think one of the more compelling human ways of looking at it is she would have had men coming and going at all hours of the day or night, and that would have not looked strange. Possibly the same is true of innkeepers, but not quite as much traffic, I don't think, in the middle of the night. So, Hebrews 11:31 lists her. We know she was in the lineage. The next question, was it right to lie about the whereabouts of these spies?
It's never okay to lie, I don't think.
Okay. She's in the lineage of Christ. I agree, lying's wrong.
Well, good people do bad things, I think. In the Bible, you know, it doesn't talk about the lie. Talks about her faith,
mm-hmm.
and it talks about her honor and what she did. So,
what I kept coming back to is I struggled with that question because I, like you said, it's not right to lie. We know that's a sin.
I just put a question mark.
I have a question mark here.
I'm not sure which question should have even been brought up.
Well,
I have no answer.
I think there is an answer when we get further into it, but. We have lists. We know other people who sin, but were still counted as faithful. Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Lord, that we can still be counted as faithful.
Don't you have God's hand in choosing harlot as the one to protect those men?
Yeah. Because she had opportunity, perhaps, that others did not. But what I come back to when I sit and mull about this is the apostle's statement many times, we must obey God rather than men. And she lied to the king of Jericho because he was going to kill them. And she had already recognized God as the God of heaven and earth. And these people were from him to do his bidding to take Jericho. She knew that was going to happen. She said, we've seen what's going on. We know you're going to take the land. When you take this city, protect us, me, my family. So wasn't she obeying God rather than man?
Well, not in lying. She
that would be circumstantial evidence. That would be like saying, well, I can lie to save my family from whatever, wouldn't it?
Well, yes.
We're getting really close to that.
We are. If that was her only motivation. I'm not sure it was, because what... Let me get my right verse here. I get over to Joshua, that will help. I'm trying to find where she talks to them.
Well, if we're not careful, we'll say, well, I have to lie this time because this is a better way.
First thing. Chapter 2, verse 8.
I think she was forgiven for that sin.
Maybe from her background and stuff, she was the impression, well... I'm not saying this is right, but maybe
little I'll be okay in this circumstance. But
I agree that that's probably where she was coming from, because she was trying to save her family.
Sure, but to say it's okay to lie, I don't think we can do that.
But she also is acknowledging God as the true God.
Sure.
And that's where I get muddy on it. But I agree. I don't think we can use this to say, well, lying's okay sometimes. Be all right sometimes. And certainly, all have sinned, fallen short of the glory of God.
And if she believes in God and believes things are going to come out all right, she shouldn't try to help him out by lying, because that's wrong.
That's true.
There may have been something else she could have done. I don't know. We don't know. I think we're speculating.
We are speculating.
We need to just... I don't think we can ever say lying's okay.
Well, I know we can't, because it's very specifically listed. So, you know, some things aren't listed and we have to make a judgment call.
Yeah.
That one's right there. Yeah. Liars and adulterers, and just right there. So, yeah. So how did she hide the spies?
Covered them up on the mother's
flax.
Now we think about our roofs.
And I wrote a roofs were flat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I wrote a scripture down where it talks about in Deuteronomy, and now I don't see where I wrote it. Maybe somebody else wrote it down too. Where it talks about building a parapet around your roof, mm-hmm. so that, I mean, that was part of the law. And so that people would be safe up on the flat roofs. They had to have something to protect them from going off the edge. So she wasn't an Israelite, but this was apparently very common practice, and to take the flax up where it could dry up in the sun. So she hid them there. So, why did she help them? Why did she lie? Why did she help them?
Verses 9, 10, and 11.
You gonna read them?
Let's see. Well, starting with 8, she says, "And so before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, 'I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath.'" So she'd heard all about it. So she was,
and she believed. She believed that God was, "The Lord your God is he who is God in heaven."
The next verse says, "You know, since I've shown you kindness, will you show me kindness?"
Right, right. This is her bargaining chip. And that's a very human approach. But she does have a confession of faith there as well. It's not just, "You're a powerful nation. You're a powerful nation because you worship the true God." Which I think is why, and again, this is my speculation, I think it's why she winds up being in the lineage of Christ. She winds up married to this person, and because she understands who God is.
And I just want to say, mm-hmm. you know, she asked them to swear to her by the Lord.
By the Lord, yeah. No.
That's not a good thing either.
No, it is not. But again, I don't...
She did it and they agreed. So
they agreed.
Once again, I don't know.
Well,
I
think it gives me hope that as I'm messing up,
exactly.
I'm going to be forgiven. I have the ability to be forgiven if I do what God wants me to do. Because yeah, there's, and all through the Bible,
you get there.
We see people who are doing things that when we have the perspective of looking on it from thousands of years back, we can go, well, that wasn't good. Why'd they do that? Do you have something there?
I always look at it that there's hope for me.
That's right. That's right. Let's see. What does this little book say about Rahab? Rahab's action in harboring the spies stemmed not from fear, but from belief that Israel's God is the true God. See Hebrews 11:31, which commends her faith, but not her immorality. There's a distinction. Rahab's house was built on or into the city walls with a flat roof on which produce could be spread out to dry, in this case flax. Her house was somewhere the spies might go with no questions asked. It has to be a brothel or an inn. It has to be someplace that nobody would go, why are these strange men coming in here? And it says, no doubt a good place to pick up information. And that's all on that one. So now we get down to the crossing of the river itself. Who were the first to step their feet into the Jordan River? The priests, the Levitical priests. And what were they carrying?
The Ark of the Covenant.
What were they told about the Ark? It was going to be ahead of them, and they were to put how much distance? Anybody remember the distance?
2 cubits. Which is about what? I think half a mile.
I don't know.
That's a lot of distance.
Well, in one commentary I read said, probably two reasons for that. One is, of course, just the honor, and you don't come near something sacred like that, which is probably the real reason. But the second one that this commentator said was, everybody could see the ark then and remember that this was God. This was how you were going to get there. So I thought that made some sense. I missed one. Why? How did they cross this major river, and why did God provide this method? Number 11.
Back to the distance, it was 2,000.
2,000 cubits. It was.
Because I started saying 2 cubits.
That's not 2 cubits.
Kept looking at your stick of it.
2 yards.
Yeah.
2,000. So they crossed this river because the Levitical priest set foot in it and stayed there. So what happened when they, let's look at 12 first. Was this a time when it was going to be dry and easy to cross? And I think it's so wonderful that the Bible says that. This is a time of year when it's overflowing and it's a huge mess. You know, because a lot of people in the world want to say, well, they crossed the Red Sea down at that little point where it's just a marsh and it's only about a foot and a half wide. And, you know, they want to go through all these physical reasons that they say it could have happened. God says right here, it's overflowing its banks. It's a huge amount of water. And you're going to step foot in, which, incidentally, there's some real faith on the part of the priests. You've got this raging river. Go ahead. You go first. We'll come after you.
Shows their faith.
Shows their faith. And when they set foot in the water, what happened?
Stopped flowing.
Quick. And? Read the next little phrase there. Stopped flowing and? Linda?
Piled up.
Piled up in a heap. A heap of water. Have you ever tried to make a heap of water? It doesn't work very well. Roger was telling me one time, and I can't even think of the term, but engineers use some sort of mathematical equation for different properties, and they can tell you how high they will stack. And sand will flow down at a certain rate, and rocks will move at a certain rate. And so they can determine. We were looking at all those piles of building materials, road building materials, you know, that are stacked up. And he said, well, they know how high it's going to be because they know this formula and how high they can stack it and how far it's going to spread out. And I went, really? I never knew such a thing.
They just threw it up.
Yeah, they just keep going until it didn't work anymore. But now they know what they can do there. But you can't heap water up. But God can. And he did. So he stopped the water, and they went across on dry ground. So who would have been the last people to step out of the river?
Someone went in first,
the priest. I don't know how long that took. There were a lot of people. If you've ever just stood in line to just move through someplace, you're not even, like at the airport, after you've gone through security, you're just trying to get to where you're going. There's not even something stopping you. 100 people, it can take a long time just to move that. And there were millions of people and cattle and donkeys who don't move very well on a good day. And, you know, just, I just can't imagine the, what it must have been like. And I, one book I read said, can you imagine being one of the Hebrew people and you're standing on the banks of this river and thinking, how in the world are we going to get across that thing? And I think that would probably be a human reaction. No matter how many miracles you've seen, your first thought's going to be, that's a lot of water. And how are we going to do this?
Yeah, and what if we get in the middle and it's stacked and it falls down?
Right. Because you can't stack water. God can.
You have to keep your faith strong.
Keep your faith. Keep your faith. So once they got over, they built a memorial, and what did they build it from?
Stones. Rocks from the river.
Rocks from the river. How many?
12.
Memory of the 12 tribes. And they took it where the feet of the priests were. I can't imagine, and again, I don't know how it happened, but I can't imagine that all these millions of people went 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, it was probably a couple of miles long where they're going. So the rocks came from where the priests were.
Question. Was it millions of people or thousands of people? Because
can't tell.
Well, I mean, I'd always thought there was about 1.5 million. I've always heard that, you know, that it went.
What was the number we came up with as they came out of Egypt? 687,000
or something like that. Yeah.
Men,
right. But then,
and now they've been wandering for 40 years. But they were waiting till a couple of generations died off. So
we don't know.
We don't know. The arithmetic and time frames would indicate probably more than 1 million people.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have any way of
Normally the Jordan River is not very wide.
No. So 1 million people are going to take a long time.
Yeah, but
anyway,
it was overflowed. Its banks, right. Everything. It was
right
raging.
Right, and they went over on dry ground, dry land, not muddy, awful stuff where cattle are going to stumble and kids are going to get all
that
muddy.
That itself is a miracle.
So there was another memorial built. Where was it built?
Gilgal.
Well, that's the one where they took the stones.
It was built in the middle.
In the river where the priest stood.
It's
still there to this day.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. How do they know that?
God said.
No. I mean today.
Well, it says still there till this day.
Oh, okay.
When this was being written.
Okay.
Might still be there. Wouldn't surprise me to find out it was still there.
They're finding things all the time. And then they're so surprised when it is exactly what
they don't like it.
God had said.
They don't like it when it's with them. I've always told my kids that science just hadn't caught up. Mm-hmm. If there's something that disagrees with the Bible, science just hadn't caught up. And a sidebar, that's so easy for me to accept because science, I read a guy one time basically said science is right till it's not. And because how many years did we believe you could count the stars? Stand there and count them. Take a long time, but you can count them. Well, then we got a telescope. No, can't count them, just like God said. And, you know, so science says this is true until it's not true anymore, until it's proven to be not true. And then they have to change their stance and come up with a different. I like the way he said it. It's true till it's not. Because it's constantly changing based on new information. But the Bible supports what we always learn through science. Every time. Every single time. So water stood between the Israelites and their inheritance. How does this correspond to us as Christians?
Baptism.
Baptism. Can we be saved without the water? Mm-hmm. Would they have gained their inheritance without going through the water? Mm-hmm. No matter how much they said, God promised us this land. It's ours. Go through the water and fight the battle. And then you can have what's promised to you. So, when the Israelites crossed the Red Sea, God sent a strong wind to dry up the bottom of the seabed. With the Jordan flowing, water was cut off, so that the water downstream was not replenished. How many other events from the Bible can you recall that occurred on the Jordan?
A couple, about eight.
There
are probably more.
There are many, but I didn't get all of them either, I don't think. So, what are some?
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist.
Naaman.
That was my first thought.
Jesus was baptizing.
Jesus was baptizing.
When Elijah went up to heaven, he parted the Jordan and went up. And then when Elisha came back, he parted again.
Mm-hmm.
And then David crossed when he was fleeing from somewhere.
And for some reason, I have 2 Kings in Acts 3.
Because Elijah or Elisha had the axe head that floated as a miracle.
I didn't have any more notes
in the Jordan.
Well, I had one that when Jacob came back, you know, when he left Esau and went to Laban, and then when he came back, there was the Jordan mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one source I found said there were 175 references to the Jordan. Not necessarily things that happened, but the plains of the Jordan, and 175 references in the Old Testament and 15 times in the New Testament.
Lot was another one. He chose the
plains. The plains.
He didn't say the Jordan River, but the plains, which was
surrounding it. Yeah, because it was fertile and lovely, and he was an ungrateful nephew. I've never liked Lot. So it figures in a major way into the Bible.
170 times it was mentioned
in the Old Testament. 15 times in the New. Now, I didn't go count them.
A lot.
But that's what it tells me. A couple of interesting things that I saw from somebody else's commentary. Sorry. Let's see if I can find it here. Oh, just the man talking about putting this in our thoughts today. We usually want the river to be dry before we make a step. And here they are at this raging river. And we do, as humans, tend to think, well, Lord, why can't you make this a little easier for me? Why can't you take away this or take away that or help me see a different way? I mean, Moses was that way. I don't want to go do that. Lord, I don't want to be the one who talks to Pharaoh. So we usually want everything to be the way we think it should be before we take that leap of faith. And, of course, if everything's the way we want it to be, it's not much of a leap of faith, is it? It hasn't really come into the realm of faith. This particular man said that Jesus is like the Ark of the Covenant. He's there, he's out there, he's in front of us, he's made the way, he's stopped the waters from flowing, he's given us what we need to reach our promise, and he's cleared that way to victory. And I thought that was, I don't think the Bible tells us that's a correlation, but I do think that was an interesting way to look at it, that they looked at the ark to know the Lord was with them, he was going to help them across this river, and Jesus is the one who will help us. And of course, that's emulated in songs all the time. Crossing the Jordan, getting over into eternity, and Jesus is there to help us cross over. So, how does this fit into the plan?
Well, when they crossed the Red Sea, they had the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, comparing that with the ark,
mm-hmm.
I guess they could have been.
Right, very similar. I have to imagine there was plenty of talk. Do you remember Grandfather telling us about the Red Sea? And it was dry ground, just like that. I mean, can't you imagine there was a lot of that going on?
Mm-hmm.
So how does this story fit into the grand plan of redemption, start to finish?
Well, the grand plan is we're going to go into water if we hope for salvation.
That's right. And God's promises are true.
Mm-hmm.
God's promises are kept, even though some of them didn't live to see it. And without the keeping of those promises,
without it, we're lost.
We would not have had Christ. That was one of the promises. So he's already made a great nation of them. Now he's bringing them to their land. And so the next part of that plan is that the seed will be a blessing to all nations. And so what can Christians learn from this lesson?
First thing I put was, what was mentioned in the first chapter was be strong and courageous.
Have faith.
Keep the law.
Keep the law. The law should be with you all the time. And even if others aren't keeping the law, you're still supposed to keep
right.
the law.
Right, and if you keep the law, God is with you.
Yeah. So I thought this was one of the more interesting lessons that we've had so far. I really enjoyed doing this one.
You know, the ruins of Jericho are still there.
Yeah. I'd love to go see all that. I'm very envious that you got to see all that.
I didn't see that.
You didn't see that?
I didn't go. I mean, there were several that went. I think Stan went to see it. I don't know. But Jericho is there, but it's,
yeah.
It's a different place.
I think the most memorable thing that I've ever done in visiting is going through Cappadocia over in Turkey and visiting all the places where the Apostle Paul preached and just knowing maybe I'm walking on the same
path. I know, fascinating. I've had no such experience, but I'd like to someday. Any other questions, comments? All right, thanks ladies. Thanks for being here in the cold.
Thank you.